Hello once more to anyone who's logging in. Another month has gone by, and we're approaching the end of April. So once again, thank you to those of you who have gotten word through in various ways, expressing appreciation for what it is we're offering on this website. And once more, I would like to thank Marcus Fellows for making all of this possible. Only two people have written through this month asking questions, and we'll get to that in a second. Before we do, I want to reiterate that whatever is expressed here is simply offered for your consideration. I'm not asking anyone to believe it. I'm not saying that this is the one correct view of existence. I'm simply saying that this is one of the possible views of existence, and it's one of the mysterious expressions of existence. The first person to write through this month with a question had this to say: "Hi, Daryl. It appears as though there are other people with other minds living in their own private worlds. How can it be seen that there are no others, with their own private thoughts, perceiving the same tree as I am? If there are 10 people looking at the tree, how many perceivers, or how many trees, are there?" So this is basically two questions together. One of them being, if there are 10 people looking at the tree, how many perceivers, or how many trees, are there? And the next one being, how can it be seen that there are no others with their own private thoughts perceiving the same tree as I am? So the answer to the first point, if there are 10 people looking at the tree, or looking at a tree, how many perceivers or how many trees are there? And from this perspective, there aren't any perceivers and there aren't any trees. There are no people perceiving a particular tree, and from this perspective, there isn't even a me sitting here offering a particular perspective. Now, I know this sounds very strange, but it's actually something very simple. It's simply acknowledging a very basic fact of existence. And perhaps the easiest way to relate to this would be to consider what would happen if we carried a baby that was 1 hour old off into the countryside and came upon a situation which appeared to be 10 people looking at a tree. If I held the baby up so that the baby was open to this entire event, and I asked the baby, "How many people do you see perceiving a tree?" What do you think the baby's response would be? For a baby that is apparently 1 hour old, there wouldn't be any response to that question. There wouldn't even be a question. For the baby, it's meaningless sound. But does that mean that nothing is happening? Or does it simply mean that there is a happening that has no particular storyline? There is the basic happening of existence presenting itself, but there aren't any labels for any portion of it. For the apparent infant, there wouldn't be any labels to help make sense of the question. There wouldn't be any question. The question itself would be meaningless sound, simply a happening that has no particular meaning. And yet that actual happening would be a vital event. There wouldn't be any way of comprehending it or understanding it. There wouldn't be any way of explaining it. It would simply be happening. There wouldn't be any thoughts dividing it up into different portions. And for an infant, you'd be fortunate to even grab the child's attention, Because there isn't any, at that point, there isn't any real focus on any apparent form. There's just the large event of the moment without a lot of specific differentiation. As adults, we focus a great deal on specific forms or apparent forms, and we focus a great deal on the labels that we have for those forms. And once in a while, someone will come along and point out that those labels and those forms, those names and forms, carry an illusion, that they do not describe existence in any way at all. Even though most apparent adults will go around believing that existence consists of forms, and that they know the names of those forms, they know what those forms actually are, someone eventually comes along from time to time and says, no, that's false. That's a fantasy. So the question becomes, how is it that we can see that that's a fantasy? Like, how can we see that? How can we acknowledge that? How can it be seen that there are no others with their own private thoughts perceiving the tree? That how can we see that what seems to be 10 people looking at a tree is not 10 people looking at a tree? Now, quite frankly, I don't know how you're going to acknowledge that. And I don't know if you ever will acknowledge that. Ultimately, it's not really important whether or not you acknowledge that. But there are some things that you might consider. And those things are really what you already know about life, the sense of life that you already have, the so-called life experience that you already have. First of all, we might consider that for every one of us, we have the sense that at a certain point, we were that infant that was 1 hour old. And that for every one of us, we had no storyline. That initially, when this great event of existence first presents itself, we don't have a storyline. It's a totally mysterious event. And every one of us have that sense. That when this totally mysterious event first presented itself, we didn't have a storyline. All of us already have the feeling that it took a lot of months and years to learn the various labels for the apparent forms in existence. We have the sense that mom would point to something and say, "Ooh, that's a nose. Can you say nose? And oh, look, this is your ear. Can you say ear? And this is your toe. This little piggy went to market. This is your toe. Can you say toe?" And so for months and years, our parents and our educational system offers these various labels for various apparent forms in existence. Until at some point it seems as though the basic focus goes more on the labels than it does on the basic happening of existence. We begin to live more in the descriptions of existence rather than the basic happening of existence. Another thing we might consider are these labels themselves. Like, what exactly are these labels? If we're English, if we speak English, what we call English, then we get labels like nose and toe and eye and consciousness and body and world. But if we lived in a different country, we would get a totally different set of sounds. If we lived in a different country that spoke a different language, we would get a totally different set of sounds. And we can perhaps realize that these sounds themselves have no inherent meaning. They only gain a meaning by getting attached to a particular form. So the word nose, that has no inherent meaning. That's just a sound. It could be the sound blix, or it could be the sound whataferoo. And those sounds have no inherent meaning on their own. But the word nose takes on a meaning by getting attached to this apparent form that we call nose. And so it becomes a pointer to this apparent form. But it doesn't have an inherent meaning. We don't really know what that form is. All of us have the sense that when this happening of existence first presented itself, it was a totally mysterious event. We had no experience of it. There's no sense of what it actually is. And in this event, these sounds start getting presented, and they start getting attached to apparent forms. The sounds themselves have no particular meaning. If I say the word blix, it has no apparent meaning to you. But if I point to an apparent form and I say this is called blix, all of a sudden it takes on some meaning. The only real meaning it has is that it points to the inherently mysterious form that it gets attached to. And that form is inherently mysterious because it's a portion of this event that we all know is a totally mysterious event when it first presents itself. So over an apparent number of months and years, there is this collecting of these basically meaningless sounds that get attached to apparent forms. Now, added to this, our basic life experience indicates that every apparent form is changing, even if we've never considered this to any great depth. If we do consider it, if I ask you, do you have the feeling that everything is changing? If you've lived life for an apparently long period of time, you will at some point come to realize that that is your general sense of things. Everything that arises, ages, and then eventually fades away. It doesn't really matter whether it's a thought or a mood or a breath or a sound or your body or the city you live in or the country you live in or the planet that we live on, or the solar system that that planet is a portion of, the galaxy, everything that we know of is changing. This is very obvious in things that change quickly, such as thought. So, you know, if we attempt to look at a thought, we can't do that because whatever thought apparently seems to arise, it's immediately gone. It's moved on to some other thought or some other expression, or maybe it's melted away totally. This flow of thought, this flow of consciousness, is much like the flowing of smoke. If we look at smoke, we can see that smoke contains a certain number of apparent forms. But if we're really honest about that situation, any particular form that seems to be presenting itself is immediately gone. It's moved on to some other form in some way. So there is no particular form. There are certain apparent forms, but actually there is this unformed event. The event of smoke or the event of thought has no particular form. The same is true of a mountain, only mountains move very, very slowly. The unformed event that they are is a very slow event. But just because it's changing very slowly doesn't mean that a mountain has any more actual form than smoke. There once was an ocean where I'm sitting here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And if anyone takes a shovel and digs into the soil here, they'll immediately strike lumps of clay. That clay is the decomposed shell of the various marine creatures that lived at the bottom of this ocean. Now, there is no ocean here. There aren't any living marine creatures here. All of that's gone. And what it is in this moment is moving on to something else. There's an old mountain range here in Manitoba. And it once was very dramatic, but now it's simply a collection of large hills, those dramatic mountains that thrust themselves up from the surface of the earth through the long, slow process of erosion. They've melted away and they've become nothing more than large hills. And at some point, those hills themselves will fade away and this will be flat land. Our so-called body is another process of apparent change. What we call the body is a living event, the heart beating, the lungs breathing, the blood flowing, the neurological system firing, the cells aging, the muscles moving and stretching. Food digesting, the immune system operating, the whole process of seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Everything that we are is this process, this event. At a certain point in the womb, apparently in the womb, we were 1/8 of an inch long. Then at another point, we were 1 foot long. At another point, we were 2 feet high, 3 feet high, 4 feet high, 5 feet high. And at some point, we'll be dust. This body will be dust and will melt away. So if I was to ask you what you are, and you describe the apparent body, the appearance of the apparent body that you are now, would that be the truth? Would it be true to say that you're that form? Or would it be truer to say that you are an event that has no particular form? Because at a certain point you were 1/8 of an inch long, at another point 1 foot long, at another point 2 feet high, 3 feet high, 4 feet high, 5 feet high. At one point you were apparently 4 years old, at another you were apparently 10 years old, at another 15 years old, 20 years old, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. What are you exactly? Are you a particular form? Or are you something, are you a process, a happening that has no particular form? What is it that your actual life experience expresses? What is it that that life experience actually reveals? So if we put these considerations together, a consideration of what our sensibilities of life actually are, what our life experience has revealed to us, what our most basic sense of existence really is, we may come to consider that an event, the event of this moment, has no particular form, that when it first presented itself, or first seemed to present itself, it was a totally mysterious event. There was no storyline for it. And these storylines that we have, these labels that we have, these descriptions that we have, they're basically meaningless sound pointing to the appearance of forms that don't actually exist. And that those labels do nothing more than point to the mysterious event of this moment. They can never really say what it is. Now, added to all of this, if we're interested, we could perhaps set aside some time and simply sit and do absolutely nothing It's not important in that particular period of time to put a strong focus on the world of thought. It's quite fine to acknowledge the larger event of the moment, what we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. But we don't have to call it anything. Those thoughts can come and go on their own. But there's a simple acknowledgement of the larger event of the moment. This moment is not simply a thought. If we went to a tropical island, we wouldn't sit in a hotel reading the brochures about the tropical island. We wouldn't sit in the hotel lobby reading descriptions of the sun, the sand, and the surf, because we know that those descriptions are not the event of sun and sand and surf. We would instead want to be outside in that event. And there isn't one of us that would go to a tropical island and sit. There isn't one of us that would sit in a hotel doing nothing but reading the brochures, because that would make no sense. The brochures aren't the reality. The descriptions of the event are not the reality. And yet, most of us put this incredibly strong focus on the world of thought, thinking that somehow it's describing reality. But it can never actually describe the event that existence is. It can never describe the event or be the event that is called seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Those labels can merely point to the event. So if we rest from time to time, if we sit down and do absolutely nothing and simply allow the entire event of the moment to express itself, we may come to realize that the happening of this moment is still a moving, shifting, dancing, unformed event presenting itself. And the thoughts come and go in their own way, in their own time. They're simply a portion of this totally mysterious event. And that ultimately, there's no way of understanding what thought is. This event that we call thought is not a thought at all. It's a totally formless or unformed happening . And the word thought merely points to that mysterious happening. It can never tell us what that happening is. So if we're in a situation that seems to be 10 people looking at a tree, we can perhaps come to realize that those apparent forms that we call 10 people are not forms at all. They're an unformed event. And that the words 10 people don't really tell us anything about the event. It simply points to those mysterious forms, that this whole happening that seems to, that, you know, gets labeled 10 people looking at a tree, it's a totally mysterious event. It was a totally mysterious event when it first presented itself, this unformed happening of existence. It's a totally mysterious event in each and every moment that presents itself. That these labels are merely meaningless sounds pointing to a particular portion of the event. That these sounds tell us nothing at all as to what the event actually is. That even the word thought and sound do not express what is actually happening here. We may come to realize that each and every moment is simply a totally mysterious happening, simply happening. The second person to write in this month wrote in saying, "Thank you for your book, with which I do relate. However, two things seem to be inconsistent. Number one, motion is created in our heads, as is time. It is we who create the notion of a before and after, and even that, as Einstein said, is relative to each of us. Thus, your notion that all there is motion seems to be yet another story, albeit created by our senses. And point number two, on the top of page 80 and elsewhere, it seems like we also need to consider that a disturbed or otherwise psychologically pained person whose natural response will ultimately push through during his moments of doing nothing, that response might be one of murder or abuse. Life will certainly continue to happen, but for this person and the target of his anger, it's not quite as loving as your ideas seem to suggest. And this person concludes by saying, I think that when we find ourselves using language to define, defend, and promote our actions and responses, we are no longer living in the flow of life. Without such language internally describing our internal state, we can be more naturally responsive, as life can then live through us, unmitigated by our thoughts about life. In this latter case, depression, anger, humor will be experienced for whatever those are, but without the story and frame of reference that usually ends up attending those emotions. And this concludes by the person asking if I have any thoughts on this. So let's go through this and address the particular points. So number one, he writes, motion is created in our heads, as is time. It is we who create the notion of a before and after, and even that, as Einstein said, is relative to each of us. Thus, your notion that all there is motion seems to be yet another story, albeit created by our senses. So this is making comment on what I've expressed in my book, Dismantling the Fantasy. And I would agree that motion is yet again another story. And in fact, at a certain point within Dismantling, I point out that these words like motion and flow and streaming, and they actually don't describe existence, and they're not even any attempt to describe existence. They're simply pointing to an event that can't ultimately be described in any way at all. As I point out in Dismantling, the whole expression of that book is an absolute fantasy, but it's a fantasy which will ultimately dismantle itself. The point of that writing, the point of that expression, was not to arrive at some ultimate description of existence. It was simply to enter the usual storyline that we all carry, or that we all seem to carry, and discover the contradiction there, to discover that the illusions we usually carry about existence, the usual storylines we usually carry about existence, the supposed experience that we carry regarding existence, it's filled with contradictions, and those contradictions ultimately indicate that there is an event, a happening, that can't be described in any way whatsoever, that our descriptions ultimately make no sense whatsoever. So, motion is another storyline, but it's not created in our heads, nor is time created in our heads. From this perspective, it is not we who create the notion of a before and after. From this perspective, there is never anything at any time other than a totally inexplicable, unformed happening. And that phrase is not attempting to describe an event, it is simply pointing to an event. As the many Zen traditions would point out, that a finger pointing to the moon is simply trying to point to this event of the moon. The finger is not important. And in the same way, any description of existence that is offered from this perspective, what might be called a non-dual perspective, any description that's offered is ultimately not important. All of it is meant to point to this happening of existence and to point to the fact that there is no possible way to describe this happening with any kind of accuracy. So regarding this first point, yes, motion is ultimately another story. So is the idea that motion is created in our heads, and so is the idea of time, and so is the idea that there is a we who create the notion of a before and after, and so is the notion of relativity. All of that is a fantasy. It is not reality. There are many teachings which will say that since no description is the absolute truth, they're all relatively true. But that's not what this perspective is saying. This perspective is saying that since all descriptions are meaningless sounds pointing to forms that ultimately have no existence, none of these descriptions actually apply to what's happening here. None of them apply. They may arise, they may apparently be useful in certain situations. If we're thirsty and we ask for a glass of water, that can be apparently functional in this event. But what's actually going on here, there's no possible way of saying. The descriptions don't apply. There isn't any description that applies. So point number two, on the top of page 80, so that's page 80 in the book Dismantling the Fantasy, and elsewhere in the book, it seems like we also need to consider that a disturbed or otherwise psychologically pained person whose natural response will ultimately push through during his moments of doing nothing, the natural response might be one of murder or abuse. Life will certainly continue to happen, but for this person and the target of his anger, it's not quite as loving as your ideas seem to suggest. So this comment is coming from a section of the book where I describe that any one of us, if we go through a traumatic situation, there will be all kinds of emotions and thoughts that present themselves. It's simply life presenting itself. It's simply the expression of this great, unformed, mysterious happening that existence is. And that without any effort on anyone's part, there will be a certain perspective that ultimately pushes through, a certain natural response to a certain set of circumstances, because both the circumstances and the response are simply the flow of nature. So this person is pointing out that that apparent response might be one of murder or abuse. And yes, I would agree. The response might be what is apparently what we would call murder or abuse. And all of that is life continuing to happen. But now his comment around this is that for this person and the target of his anger, it's not quite as loving as your ideas seem to suggest. Now, I'm not sure where this word loving came from. I can't ever recall using the word loving in relation to the expression of nature. I've used the word love, but I've specified very clearly that my use of the word love is love in its highest philosophical definition, which is a complete openness to existence. Often it's referred to as an unconditional receiving, but I find that a little too personalized. There isn't anything separate from existence in order to receive it. So there's just basically an open-heartedness to existence, or an openness within existence. A simple acknowledgement of all that life is expressing. And that might be considered love in its highest philosophical sense. But that doesn't seem to be indicated in the word loving. Loving carries with it some kind of cozy, warm, caring kind of indication. And the word love in its highest philosophical sense does not carry that feeling, that indication. It's more of, you could say an objective openness. I would say very directly that life ultimately moves towards a love, because ultimately life will display that we don't really have anything to say about what it's going to do. And so it will beat down any of the resistance to it, any of the apparent resistance to it. And ultimately there will have to be an openness to whatever life presents, because there's no way to avoid what life's going to present. However, this has nothing to do with the moment feeling pleasant or loving. It has nothing to do with a notion of caring. I'm not saying that life will ultimately move towards a pleasant, loving, warm, fuzzy situation. And this brings up actually a point that should be or could be considered. So often within these so-called spiritual teachings, people come to them with the hope that they're going to ultimately discover some place of ongoing pleasure. And these teachings have never offered that. These teachings are ultimately asking us to consider that life is going to play out in whatever way it plays out, and that the moments of confusion and loneliness and desperation and despair and darkness are just as much the natural expression of this mysterious happening as are the moments, the apparent moments of light and wholeness and clarity and love, and moments in which there is a sense of, or a feeling of wholeness and completion, that all of this is the divine expression. To acknowledge this mysterious dance, to acknowledge this indefinable happening, isn't saying that it's automatically going to move to nothing but golden light and love and warmth and caring. It's not saying that we're in awakening to the happening of life, the happening, the unformed, indefinable event of existence, that somehow this is going to give us control over the situation, because the realization is that there is only this mysterious happening. There is no me separate from the happening that has ever been influencing it in any way whatsoever. So this particular note concludes with this person saying, writing, "I think that when we find ourselves using language to define, defend, and promote our actions and responses, we are no longer living in the flow of life. Without such language internally describing our internal state, we can be more naturally responsive, as life can then live through us, unmitigated by our thoughts about life. In this latter case, depression, anger, humor will be experienced for whatever those are, but without the story and frame of reference that usually ends up attending those." And from this perspective, that's a nice idea, but actually it doesn't really make much sense, because the whole idea that there is somebody who's using language to define, defend, or promote his or her actions and responses is a fantasy. There isn't anybody doing that. There is simply a totally indefinable, unformed happening presenting itself. the comment that if we use language in a certain way, we are no longer living in the flow of life. From this perspective, this also is not accurate, because there isn't any moment where we're not living in the flow of life. There is nothing but the flow of life, the apparent flow of life, or the unformed happening of life. There isn't anybody apart from that choosing to live with it or not live with it. Everything that's happening is the divine expression. That is the indefinable happening of existence. Now, it's an interesting consideration that without internal language describing our internal state, we can be more naturally responsive to life. But there isn't anyone who's going to get to choose how much of an internal, a supposed internal dialogue is describing an internal state, because all of that is a totally unformed, spontaneous happening presenting itself. It's an interesting idea to think that if we do certain practices or if we live in a certain way, that we're going to gain some ultimate control over existence, when the very urge itself to live in a certain way isn't even our doing. That itself is the expression of existence. Some people feel that if they spend their lives monitoring their apparent thoughts, that they will somehow gain some ultimate control over those thoughts. Or that somehow what we call depression, anger, and humor will be experienced in some pure way without the story and frame of reference that usually ends up attending those emotions. So ultimately, there isn't anybody who's going to be getting rid of thought, because there isn't anybody having a thought in this moment. All of this is a totally mysterious event expressing itself. So as it states in the Ashtavakra Gita, the whole notion of doing something is false. And the whole notion that we are somehow going to get to some place where we're not going to do something is also false. Because there is only this unformed ocean of existence presenting itself. Each and every one of us will be presented in whatever way we're presented. And if we really acknowledge the apparent forms in existence, we may discover, or we may realize, that each and every apparent form is a unique expression. Each and every so-called human being is a unique expression. And that for however many thousands of years, apparently thousands of years, there has been an attempt to get everyone to gather together in some kind of unified approach to life. All of the attempts to get us to join hands and sing the same song of love and peace, all of the attempts to find one general approach to life that will suit everybody, it hasn't happened. Each and every one of us is a unique expression. As much as we might want to be like someone else, we can't ever be like exactly like anyone else. Nature will present us in whatever way it presents us. So from this, what might generally be called a non-dual perspective, if we have an apparent situation where someone is living their life without any sensitivity to their internal dialogue or their internal emotional world, and it seems as though that person, because they're entirely insensitive to that inner world, they live a life that's somewhat violent, that's somewhat abusive to others, that is not that person's choice. That is a totally inexplicable happening the way it does. And in the same way, if we have what seems to be an apparent person being highly sensitive to their apparent internal world, their world of thought and their world of emotion, and it seems like that person is able to live life in a much more skillful manner, that is also a fantasy. That actually what that is a totally indefinable event, an unformed event expressing itself. That those apparent forms in either case, these are merely the expressions of nature. They're the apparent forms of something that ultimately has no form. And that that movement is a totally mysterious expression, a totally mysterious dance, a totally mysterious action. We do not create our bodies and brains. We do not create our needs, our interests, or our concerns. We do not create our abilities or lack of abilities. So our apparent actions are not our doing. Because our apparent actions are simply the movement of the body and brain, the movement of needs, interests, and concerns, the movement of abilities and lack of abilities that simply arise in this great mysterious happening that we call existence. Some people call it the movement of nature, the dance of the universe. So to sum up, I would agree with this person that the whole notion of motion is yet again another story, and that my only use of the word motion is to point to an event that has no explanation. The whole expression of dismantling the fantasy is simply an entering, it's simply entering the storylines that we normally carry, and it's pointing out that those storylines are not true. They carry very obvious contradictions, and it becomes obvious that they do not describe the happening of this moment. Even the description that there's a book called Dismantling the Fantasy is a total fantasy. But then, so is the idea that it is we who create a notion of before and after. That's a fantasy. And the idea that there was an Einstein is a fantasy. And the idea that there is relativity is a fantasy. All of this is a totally indefinable happening, simply presenting itself the way it does. It will play out in whatever way it plays out. We may have certain apparent inclinations. We may have certain feelings about how life should be lived. And all of that is a totally mysterious event that's spontaneously happening. By all means, be whatever you are compelled to be. But from this perspective, watch out for thinking that you're approach to life is somehow healthier than someone else's, or that somehow it carries more understanding than somebody else's approach. The whole expression that you are is a totally mysterious and spontaneous, unformed event presenting itself, and it will play out in whatever way it plays out, along with every other apparent form. Every other apparent person, all of it will simply happen in whatever way it happens. So once again, whatever is offered here is simply for consideration. I'm not asking anyone to agree with it. I'm simply presenting a certain perspective. It's not the one and only way of viewing existence. It's one of the mysterious expressions of existence. It's not a right expression. It's not a wrong expression. It's simply whatever it is. If it's important to you, then it's important. If not, it's not important.